We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
We'll talk about the situation with China. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. Let's start with Joe Biden's comment that the U.S. would respond militarily if China attacked Taiwan. Is that anywhere in the realm of reality?
Well, I have some real concerns about the statement that was made. One could say it's not Joe Biden's first verbal gaffe, but this one is particularly serious. I do think that strategic ambiguity is really the better way to go. It's kept the peace for decades in the strait. And a move away from that could, in fact, in itself trigger the war that we're trying to prevent. And moreover, I've followed the military balance in the strait for a couple of decades, and I'll tell you, it's really tenuous. The U.S. could lose such a war, so we'd better be very cautious, I think, in these circumstances.
Talk about strategic ambiguity, if you would. What is that?
Well, this is the idea that we have a lot of treaty alliances around the world, including, in the Asia Pacific with South Korea and Japan and the Philippines. I think those are wise and these are countries that we can feasibly protect, but Taiwan has always been in a different circumstance. Let's not forget it was 50 years ago this year that Nixon and Kissinger arranged for this awkward embrace with China, but that involved the One China policy, and along with it came this kind of strategic ambiguity. That is, we will help Taiwan a little bit, but we do not have a full up defense treaty with Taiwan. In my view, that is all by design. It's this really is a bridge too far, in my view, for to think that we could possibly defend this little island, just 90 miles off of China's shore.
And along those lines, go back to the One China policy, if you would, Professor, because, again, like you're saying, I was under the impression that it was Chinese, or who owns Taiwan? What's the whole situation there in terms of independence or who's under whose reign?
Right. Well, Taiwan has had a lot of autonomy over, really since, let's go back all the way to the Chinese Civil War, which kind of finished in 1949, but in another way, that civil war continues to this day, and China has maintained a very robust claim to the island, and it wasn't that long ago that China was firing artillery shells regularly to remind us. That only stopped in 1979 when we removed our recognition of the island. So Taiwan has this ambiguous kind of non-state status. And we don't really, we try not to take a position on Taiwan's status, but we have said that we have a One China policy, which I think can be read, with common sense, which suggests that we understand that Taiwan is actually part of China. We may not want to accept all of the things that come with that, to my estimate, we have to realize that the 21st century and beyond are going to depend on a working relationship with China, on avoiding war with China. So I think, you know, we have to, in my view, we have to give substance to that one China policy. We can't just dismiss it and pretend it doesn't exist. We did agree to this. And this one China policy has done, you know, it has been good for the United States. That would be my view.
And it's considered a territory, not a country, not a member of the UN, or it is in the UN. No, not in the UN. Correct. It's a territory,
correct.
Not a country.
Correct. Actually, Taiwan used to have, you know, Taiwan, by the way, the formal name of Taiwan is the Republic of China, not the People's Republic of China, mm-hmm. which is in Beijing, but the Republic of China. So actually, Taiwan actually had the UN seat, and that was transferred as part of this very intricate diplomacy that took place in the 1970s. I don't think, you know, they weren't happy to give up their UN seat, but no, they do not have a role in the United Nations.
I don't know of anybody geopolitically who could make a rational case for us defending rather Taiwan. That's just my opinion. I don't know. Do you agree with that, Professor, or not?
I do agree with you on this. I just think it's a bridge too far. And, you know, my view is this is basically a civil war that's been ongoing and that we, you know, should have learned by now between Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. We should have learned that we shouldn't. You know, sort of interfere in other people's civil wars. I think so. To me, we, you know, look, China could turn into a very aggressive power in the future. It's possible. I don't think it's likely, but it is possible. So, you know, we may have to draw a red line, and we really have. I mean, around Japan and the Philippines. But in my view, Taiwan is really the worst place to draw such a red line. It's just. Really not, in my view, no matter what we do, we're not going to be able to defend this island. So, you know, we should just play it cautiously and encourage negotiations. I do think a negotiated settlement is within the realm of possibility. You know, the leaders of Taiwan and China met and they had a good meeting not that long ago. It was in the end of 2015. So it's really, you know, we have to let diplomacy take the lead here and support, you know, support Taipei, but, you know, hope that we can avoid, you know, any kind of major conflict. And I don't think either side wants a conflict here.
To me, Professor, Biden's gaffe is equivalent to leaving a cocktail party with your significant other. And as soon as you get in a car, you turn around and you say, why in the hell did you bring that up? Accurate? Yes,
yeah, I mean, look, let's face it. Many, you know, Americans do have a kind of emotional attachment. I think I got to say, I think there's an emotional attachment in Japan. And often when U.S. leaders are in the room with Japanese diplomats and so forth, they tend to kind of take on this kind of emotive attachment. After all, Taiwan was one of Japan's first colonies and it was kind of a model colony for Japan. So I think Japan feels a little different about this. But I don't think we should get caught up in that. Our interests are not, you know, identical. We didn't have that experience. And at the time, we, you know, we insisted that Japan return this territory to China. That's in the record, you know, in the Cairo Declaration. So, I mean, yeah, to me, you know, I think people are getting carried away by events in Ukraine and thinking that we can, you know, stick it to China just the way we're sticking it to Russia. I think this is exceedingly dangerous. We had better not, you know, make false assumptions about this conflict. After all, you know, China is a nuclear power like Russia. And for the same reason that we don't want to get into a direct conflict with Russia. And I think President Biden has been pretty careful to avoid that. I think we need to do the same in these circumstances.
Let's talk about the agreement with the Philippines, red lines, et cetera. If something were to happen, how does China's military stack up to ours, and how have things changed in the last decade or so?
Yeah, things are changing quite dramatically. You know, China's been engaged in a very robust military buildup. By the way, a lot of it inspired by the 1995-96 Taiwan crisis, where we did more or less sortie a couple of aircraft carrier battle groups into the region, and we sort of told China that, you know, it has to stand down. They did, but, you know, part of that experience was, okay, next time we're going to be ready for those carrier groups. And indeed, they have built up a very robust military posture, you know, that involves, you know, everything from undersea warfare to, you know, very strong air power. Really, it's missiles that are their foremost strength, though. Their any ship cruise missiles, I would say, are better than ours. Unfortunately, they also have some missiles that we just don't have. They have a deployed hypersonic weapon, which I think may also target our aircraft carrier groups, as well as a weapon called the anti-ship ballistic missile, which we also don't have. And this is one, there's been a lot of speculation about it, but they call it a carrier killer. So that this is, you know, to me, we have to, it's not to say we're not about to yield the Pacific, and our position remains strong. We're ahead of them in certain areas. You know, our submarines remain significantly stronger than theirs. That's definitely a plus on our side, but we need to be cautious. They have very substantial military power. And if it came to war, many, many Americans would die. Many Chinese would die too. I'm absolutely sure of that, but this war is really avoidable. You know, we can share the Pacific. As far as red lines in the Philippines, yes, the South China Sea is a complicated situation. China has built up its power there. They built up these kind of reef bases, which I think we did not like. On the other hand, you know, I don't think there's really almost any scenario where China is threatening the main islands of the Philippines, you know, Luzon, for example, or Palawan or something. What they're arguing about out there are fish, you know, fish resources, the ability to explore for oil and gas. You know, I don't think Americans want to tangle with China over, you know, oil drilling rights. That's just, you know, we don't need to go there. So we should look at our alliance with the Philippines in a defensive way. Sure, we're going to defend their main islands. We're not going to allow China to attack, absolutely. On the other hand, we should not get dragged into some kind of complicated maritime disputes involving, you know, fishing boats and so forth. After all, you know, countries around the world tangle on fishing disputes. You know, France and Britain regularly go at it. We even go at it with Canada occasionally about fishing disputes. So the fishing dispute should not be the cause of World War III.
So from the beginning with these islands that China was constructing, you know, I've been saying, and not that I'm, you know, of any note or anything, but that if, in fact, you were going to stop them, the time would be before they began construction, because once they put all of this time, effort and money into building these islands, there's no way they're going to abandon them. And that's just the fact that we're going to have to live with these things, correct? With the South China Sea and the Chinese islands and that kind of situation that you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I do recall, actually, in the sort of 2013, 2014 timeframe, as we came to know about these you know, reef bases, there, you know, there were some voices, I think, kind of on the more radical side saying, hey, you know, we need to act now against these bases and lay down the law. But, you know, I distinctly remember being in the room with some very senior American admirals who said, you know, folks, we are not going to start a war right now over these little reef bases. You know, the U.S., by the way, has something like 800 bases abroad. You know, so China has a couple more bases. This is not a major threat. Moreover, you know, in the age of precision strike warfare, can we destroy these bases within 24 hours? Yes, we can. We have that ability. So, I mean, sure, this gives China a little bit of leg room, if you will, gives them a few more options, gives them some more, you know, surveillance capability in, you know, at a further distance from China, but it doesn't appreciably change the military balance, in my view. And we shouldn't, you know, no need to exaggerate the threat in this case. I think we, you know, the U.S. Navy, U.S. military power, we will continue to sail across the South China Sea and so forth. And China, I don't think, can really contest that. As long as we're certain and we have defensive motives in mind, I'm certain we can prevail in any scenario, you know, that we think through reasonably. As I said, I think Taiwan is just beyond our power, and it, you know, we needn't take on that burden. But as far as defending our, you know, the Philippines is very defensible. Same with Japan. And we can do this, and we can do it without, you know, bankrupting ourselves.
And along those lines, Professor, in terms of China and their ability to project their power beyond their own border or territorial waters, unlike Putin, the Chinese don't want a war, do they? They have no intention of that's not in their best interest, and they know that, right?
I think you're right, Tommy. You know, my assessment is, you know, China, it's a huge country, have plenty of internal problems. They would like to focus on those. You know, moreover, if you look at the record, you know, as you pointed out, Russia has a record of kind of invading its neighbors, right? From, you know, go back to 2008 with Georgia and other circumstances. But, you know, China has been much more cautious. Their last major use of force, you have to go all the way back to 1979 with Vietnam. So, I mean, you know, China has tended to be pretty cautious. I mean, they're starting to flex their muscles. You know, they're also doing some positive things out there that people don't often recognize. They have peacekeeping troops in you know, in Mali, in Sudan, even in Lebanon, that are doing important work. So I mean, yeah, I think don't want to exaggerate the threat, and we need to encourage China to, as it were, to stay on the right path, to not make the mistakes that Russia has made. And I think that involves extending a hand. It involves recognizing some of the good things they're doing out there, and not, you know, and not, as it were, freaking out over, you know, when they set up a base here and there. You know, this, I don't think, you know, it's just doesn't fit with their ideology, but also, you know, there's just no reason to believe that China is planning some tide of aggression that will sweep across the Asia Pacific. I don't see that at all. Taiwan is a particular problem. I mean, that is a sovereignty issue. So I don't doubt their determination there. And we should be very cautious and judicious there. But as far as these other areas, you know, Philippines, Japan, Southeast Asia, the Indian Ocean, I think we can be quite a bit more relaxed, even as we maintain, you know, a strong military.
So how do you see that playing out? And what I said before, I should have excluded Taiwan in that, in terms of the China wanting a war, wanting to expand, et cetera. How do you see it playing out with China and Taiwan in the future?
Well, it's going to be a very delicate dance. And I have to say, I do think the Ukraine scenario gives us kind of a taste in some respects. I mean, China has made it very clear that this is a core interest, that this is a red line. I do expect them to continue to ramp up threats. In my view, they already have the capabilities they need to subdue the island, to even to invade the island in a short period of time, probably less than a month. You know, but I think, you know, they have kept the door open to negotiated solution. And I hope that leaders in Taipei and Washington, in Tokyo and in Beijing are all wise enough to kind of grasp the opportunity that there is a way forward with negotiations here. And you know, I do think the Ukraine example has kind of sobered China a bit. You know, they may have thought about the costs of war. I do think they would prevail, but it would be incredibly costly, you know, to China's reputation, to, you know, they would lose so many people, they would have to kill so many people, and it would damage their economy very seriously. So, you know, there are so many reasons not to do this. I think we can keep, as it were, kicking this can down the road, but I mean, it should involve some substantive movement toward integration of Taiwan and China. And I think, you know, a reasonable negotiated solution is possible. Most people who look at this think that a confederation is realizable. Now, I know the Hong Kong example has gotten people very, very stirred up. But to me, the idea of sort of one country, two systems is still quite a feasible vision. That goes back to Deng Xiaoping. I think the Chinese don't want to invade Taiwan. They'd much rather just sort of peacefully integrate. So I think we should encourage that.
Appreciate your time, Professor. I hope we get to talk to you again soon. Professor Lyle Goldstein, Director of Asia Engagement at Defense Priorities and a visiting professor at Brown University. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Jeff Nowak, a WWL sports reporter, about Saints OTAs today and about the rookie minicamp that was over the weekend and more. It's 940, 20 till 10. Traffic now on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.